they can vote for as many shows as they want, but they can vote for each show only once.
A weekend of peace at Goose Lake.
That's very right on, Brother Dan.
Hello, baby.
Dusty 2-4.
Now with more music, Pat St. John.
Dick Hurton.
Ted Clark.
Mike Woods.
Scott Berger.
WKNR presents
the Keter13.com podcast.
Welcome to our first 2005 edition of the Keter 13 podcast. I'm Scott Westerman, and on this week's program, 250 Rising Suns, a conversation with a man who tracks the world's 10 most popular podcasts. Jim Heddle plays a Detroit garage band rarity, and we have a 1980 interview with Mitch Ryder. That's all ahead on this week's Keter podcast.
Motor City Music.
If you check out our link list for this week's program, you'll see an interesting Russian website that contains links to 250 cover versions of this former Keener number one.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun.
From Bob Dylan to Toto to the 101 Strings to the Keener version by The Animals that Paul Cannon edited to 3 minutes and 26 seconds. They're all in one place at a Russian website, and we've got the complete link in this week's show notes at KeenerPodcast.com.
WKNR!
Keener! 13!
Because I told you before, oh, you can't do that.
In In the news this week, a second U.S. appeals court has ruled that the recording industry can't force ISPs to identify music downloaders. In a 2-1 decision, the Eighth Circuit in St. Louis affirmed another appeals court ruling that bars the Recording Industry Association of America from getting user information from internet providers. The RIAA says the ruling won't stop the industry's effort to clamp down on file sharing. Meanwhile, Wired Magazine reports on an ultra-secure shadow internet where movies, software, and music begin their illegal journey to computers around the world. In many cases, high-quality bootlegs of films pop up there before they are released to the big screen. Follow the link on our link list at KeenerPodcast.com for more information. Ricky Martin in Spanish? Well, remember the Berlitz foreign language tapes you used to see advertised in the airline magazines? Well, it's now possible to learn Spanish in your car via podcast. Check out this week's link list for the RSS feed.
Hello, baby!
This Christmas, we bought the kids a year's subscription to the Packet 8 VOIP phone service, along with a new cordless phone. Well, now Vonage has announced a marriage of the two with a Wi-Fi handset that consumers can use anywhere there's an open Wi-Fi connection. The company has partnered with Ustarcom to introduce the F1000 802.11b unit in the late spring. Kevin Spacey's Bobby Darin biopic is doing well at the box office, but did you know about Bobby's Motown connection? According to an article written by Susan Whittall in the Detroit News, Darin tuned up his act at the Gay Haven in 1956. The former Dearborn nightclub was once one of Detroit's hottest night spots and was a regular advertiser on Keener's predecessor, WKMH. Here's another piece of Bobby trivia. Darin was briefly the manager of Detroit heartthrob Jamie Coe. Follow the link to Susan's story on Bobby Darin on our link list.
Big Time Variety returns to Saturday Night Television on the new ABC, the Hollywood Palace, Saturday night, Channel 7.
That's a Keener classic commercial for WXYZ from 1967. And speaking of ABC, from the Keener Almanac, it was January 1st, 1968, when ABC broke with tradition and launched four radio networks: ABC Information, American Contemporary, ABC FM, and American Entertainment. On January 2nd, 1938, Bob Smith was born in New York. He would grow up to become a disc jockey, movie star, and host of the Midnight Special television series as Wolfman Jack. In 1958, KFWB in Los Angeles becomes color radio as Chuck Bloor introduces one of the earliest Top 40 formats. In 1997, Gary L. Mack, who pioneered CKLW's rapid-fire 2020 news as Byron McGregor, passed away. And in 1998, radio legend Robert W. Morgan did his final show at KERF.
Our world is empty without you. Keep hanging on to WKNR. Keener 13, it's fun!
And now let's go into the vault with Jim Heddle.
Scott, this week we're going to hear one of the most obscure songs to ever make it onto the Keener Music Guide. It was on the lower half of the list for just a couple of weeks in June of 1965. The song was done by a Detroit-area group who recorded for the Dearborn record label called Tino and the Revlons. On the flip side of the record, they do an excellent, echoey version of the old Buddy Holly tune, Rave On. But the song that got played on Keener was an original number written by Mike Randall called Little Girl, Little Girl.
Saw you today, little girl, little girl. You passed my way. For
Little Girl, a Keener rarity from Tino and the Revlons. Hear Jim Heddle's weekly internet radio program on AnnArborAlive.com.
WKNR, Keener 13.
And now our podcast pick of the week. We've mentioned some of the sites that rate podcasts, and this week we'll talk with the creator of PodcastAlley.com. Chris McIntyre is a web designer and web marketing consultant living in Nashville. As the podcast phenomenon started to take off, he envisioned a site that would be part podcast directory and part community, where listeners could rate their favorite programs and where the newest podcast could find some free promotion. We had a Skype conversation this week, and he told us how he got the idea for PodcastAlley.com.
You know, being in the field I'm in, obviously I have to read a lot of news to stay up with the technology and with marketing trends. And one of the news stories I get a long time ago for podcasting, I read it, and it really intrigued me as a way for people like me who don't like reading, and I'd rather hear it, as far as relating to blogs goes, to get that information. So within a week, I'd done all the, it was hard to find X description, which is what like iPodder and stuff like that was. It just had the name of the show. So what I wanted to do was provide a website where people could put in a description and people could vote, and there was a 5-star rating and people could leave comments, to give kind of a clean package for every podcaster out there to let their show be known.
Well, we're experiencing one of the challenges of VOIP. Between your connection and mine, some of the packets are dropping out. Do you use a headset with Skype?
Yeah, this is, I just bought some new studio equipment to start getting into doing some podcasting myself, but I haven't got it all set up to do Skype and everything yet, so I have to use this headset still.
What will your podcast be about?
I'm researching a lot of different topics right now, but initially it's just going to be about podcasting. You know, I'm going to do a lot of featured podcasts and really push some of the newer shows out there and list out the new podcast aggregators and things that are coming up in the forum, kind of people drive a way to drive people to the site so they can find out more information about podcasting.
How does one get into the top 10 podcasts at Podcast Alley?
The top 10 is completely regulated by the users who go to the site. And right now, every user is allowed to vote for each podcast only one time, because we had some issues with voter fraud in the past, which you may or may not have heard about. But it's IP-based now, and anybody can go there, and they can vote for as many shows as they want, but they can vote for each show only once.
I noticed there are over 600 podcasts listed at PodcastAlley.com. Do you look at every single one of those personally?
Yeah, pretty much all I do is I try to remain as unbiased as possible, but I go through and do make sure that the website link works, that the podcast feed works, and if the description is too long, sometimes I'll email the podcast owner back and ask them, you know, can we cut it down a little bit, or, you know, remove email links and stuff like that, just to keep a consistent look throughout the site.
How many new podcasts come into your inbox at Podcast Alley every day?
I guess since Christmas, it's been about maybe 5 to 10 a day.
And how much time does it take you to vet all of these podcasts?
It doesn't take a lot of time at all. It's actually pretty easy, but I do like trying to keep as thorough job done as possible to make sure that I'm providing the best information to the podcast community as possible.
What podcast do you listen to?
I listen to so many different ones. My ones I listen to every day basically are Insomnia Radio, Engadget, Coverville, Geek News Central, Endurance Radio, /.review when it's on, and a couple other ones. But what I try to do is every week or so, I try to add 5 or 10 new ones in there to get a feel of what the rest of the community is doing.
And do you listen on an iPod?
What's funny is I actually don't have an iPod. I listen to it in many ways, not counting an iPod. When I'm in the morning, I wake up and I get a couple of shows like Jimmy Jet and some comedy shows, and I'll put them on my Creative Movo, just a 64 megabit MP3 player. A lot of times if I'm going places during the day and I can plan ahead, I'll burn some longer shows to a CD so I can listen to them in my car. I'm kind of the mindset that if I don't have an iPod, it helps me push the podcast community as not being associated with the iPod.
We're talking with Chris McIntyre, the founder and webmaster for PodcastAlley.com. Chris, recently you were contacted by Rolling Stone magazine. How did that happen?
They pretty much called me out of the blue. You know, specifically, they wanted to talk about shows that related to music because of the nature of their magazine.
I notice that you've begun to spotlight certain podcasts on the site with a detailed description of the show and a Q&A with the producers. With the number of visitors you have to PodcastAlley.com, this has to impact the featured podcast's listenership.
The Insomnia Radio is the featured podcast up there right now, and it's only been up there a handful of days, maybe 5 days or something like that. And the number of people that have clicked on the... So the potential for his user base to grow in that short amount of time is actually pretty significant.
Do you think you'll ever get to the point where you'll accept payment for this kind of positioning?
Definitely. And I've had some people ask me about stuff like that and many different things. You know, I've had people proposition me about advertising on the site and stuff like that. And I'm being, to be honest, because it does take a lot of work and the websites aren't free. But I only want to do information relevant to the site, obviously, so I got to keep that in mind.
Our thanks to Chris McIntyre, the founder of PodcastAlley.com, a website that provides a directory of over 600 different podcasts, along with a chance for visitors to vote for their favorites. You can help us get into the Podcast Alley Top 10 by heading over there right now and casting your vote for Keener13.com.
WKNR.
And now let's turn back the dial to the summer of 1970, when WKNR-FM was part of the underground radio revolution. Michigan concert promoters were in the midst of trying to clone Woodstock at a place called Goose Lake. Mitch Ryder was one of those who was there, and in this August 10th air check, he talks about it with WKNR-FM's Dan Carlisle.
100.3. This is WKNR-FM, Dearborn.
It was a weekend of peace at Goose Lake.
We've got all the people we can handle here. So you can just start announcing that the park, the Goose Lake thing, is officially closed for this festival. No more people will be allowed in. The festival, of course, is going on, but the park is closed.
It was a weekend of peace at Goose Lake.
The shows have been going off on schedule, and there's been no incidents. You know, everything's been very, very cool, and most of the kids are really grooving on the thing, but the capacity thing has now absolutely been reached.
A weekend of peace at Goose Lake.
Nick McKay from Goose Lake Park. All is reported quiet so far this morning at the Goose Lake International Music Festival. Festival promoters closed the park about midnight last night, saying they were filled to capacity. Officials put the total number of people inside the park at 125,000.
A weekend of peace at Goose Lake. It shocked some, it maddened others. It was a weekend of peace at Goose Lake. It made a lot of people happy. Will there be another Goose Lake? Will the activities of this weekend continue in peace? A special, a weekend of peace at Goose Lake, Tuesday at 7 o'clock.
Okay, that's tomorrow night, and I hope that you will check it out. There's some astounding tape footage that we have for this special tomorrow. And as I said, Mitch Ryder with us today, who also was at Goose Lake with 200,000 other people, except that his point of view would be maybe a bit different than ours. He performed there. I'd like to talk to you a bit about that, Bill,
if I could.
Or yes, Mitch, whichever. Yeah. I'm used to calling you Bill, so I'm going to call you Bill.
Well, whatever you call me when I see you crazed bumping into walls on your way home at night, having to live anywhere near you is like... But I don't want to... We have some real definite views about the whole thing. It was good. The whole thing is a rule. You know, I want to tell you how I felt about it musically. First, I want to tell you how it affected me as a person just coming in. Okay.
Okay.
Can I relate to that?
Sure.
Okay. Musically, which is what I was going to do first, it was perfect. It just couldn't have been better musically to play there, because they had this enormous, great PA system, and you could practically hear a pin drop. And I thought the PA was really together.
It's portable audio, by the way. Stanley Andrews in Harvard.
Yeah, wow. It was really nice, man. It was a pleasure to play through. You know, when you play through the best possible equipment and everything, and you do it that way, it's really far out, and it really sounds nice. It makes it worth your while, you know, to hear it that come out that good. That was really together. And, like, they had a revolving stage, which is a unique concept. Unless you want to get too mechanized in your format, you know. For a while there, it seemed a little ridiculous. One band would play, and another band would play, and they're grinding this wheel around, and one band's disappearing, and all of a sudden more music's coming, and another band's already playing as it faces you, you know. It's I don't know. For a while there, I was a little afraid of that. But then I think when I got on and got the little ride, it really... it was like being a merry-go-round or something. Anyway, that worked, too. That worked, man. The stage area worked. The people worked. Everybody was there. Everybody was trying to do something with it and live out there. And, of course, we went out for a little bit, not very long, because, unfortunately, our whole section was segregated from the people. And what did that sound just stop?
That was a cartridge stopping.
Oh, good. It scared me. I thought it was coming down right now on the radio. Well, listen. What was I saying? Oh, yes. The bad thing about the whole thing was the fence that separated the people from the stage. And there was barbed wire on the top. And I can't understand that or get into it at all. But, like... the people could hear the music if they wanted to hear it. The thing was really together, you know. Everything was together. I mean, you couldn't make a mistake. It was a little too together, you know. It was impossible to make a mistake because they were ready to say, well, you made a mistake, but it's cool.
Yeah. All right, you made a mistake.
Nobody made a mistake. You know, the state police thought maybe 120 people did when they're coming out. But, of course, they never went in the festival grounds, you know. But it was really a nice thing. It was together. It was Goose Lake. I have an idea for a logo that I'd like to spread around, but I won't want to get into it now. It's okay. Kind of a creative area.
You know, today Governor Milliken and his boys are talking about not allowing another Goose Lake. And my thoughts on it are this. Governor Milliken and his people don't go to Goose Lake. And it's not their decision whether there should be another one. It's our decision because we're the people who go and support these things. And so I really don't think they have anything to say about it. I think we should let them know. This is an election year, and I'm sure that that's one of the things that motivated Milliken to make this decision, since a lot of the irresponsible AM and newspaper media have made a big deal of the drugs that were sold there, and that's a fact. That's not anything that is a big deal. That's a fact. We do use drugs. Our culture uses drugs, and it goes on. So I think that we should bombard them with telegrams. Governor Milliken, I'm going to send one and let him know that I am of voting age, and if he tries to pull a number like this, he very definitely will not be getting my vote. And as a media person, I will not be recommending, of course, any way I can that he get any votes. And even if you're not of voting age, I think you should rip off a telegram immediately to the state capitol in Lansing, to Governor Milliken, with your viewpoints on Goose Lake, whether he should be jumping in there and trying to stop another festival. I think that's our duty to do that.
That's very right on, Brother Dan. That is really nice. How'd you do that? That was nice, Danny. But listen, it's time you face up to the reality of the situation. If Governor Milliken really doesn't want that thing to happen again, it really ain't going to happen.
Well, I think we...
Now, all that comes down to is whether you want another Goose Lake in particular, in quotes, the one that went down the way it went down, if you liked it for that, or whether you want the principle of a Goose Lake. Now that's what it's coming down to. And if the economics, because they did have something like 200,000 people in there at one time at 15 a crack, if the economics at that kind of a bring-in are strong enough to show the governor that this is a very nice thing to do and we can pay some high taxes on this and that and everything else, then we'll have more Goose Lakes. It's really a far out trip. You know, I'm just a musician and I'm not political at all, so I don't want to... They do any damage here, you know, because they'd take my guitar away, you know. Yeah. So I'm just going to like say it was a very together thing, and there was a lot of thought put into it, and the people that put it together seemed to be pretty together people. But that barbed wire on top of that fence sure alienated me from a lot of people. A lot of people.
Mitch Ryder with Dan Carlisle on WKNR FM on August 10th, 1970. That was John Small reading the news and Mac Owens doing that station identification. And that's this week's Keener13.com podcast. Visit KeenerPodcast.com for a complete link list from this week's show and for a complete archive of every Keener podcast. Special thanks to Chris McIntyre for talking with us about PodcastAlley.com. To Jim Heddle for bringing us this week's trip into the vault, and to Dan Carlisle for his interview with Mitch Ryder. And that's how the world looks through the rose-colored glasses we wear every time we think of our favorite Detroit 60s radio station. You can find everything Keener right now on the web at www.keener13.com. grab the XML file off the site and plug it into your favorite podcast aggregator, and you'll never miss a show. Thanks to Jonathan Wolford at Jam Creative Productions for allowing us to use the original Pam's Keener jingles, and to Kenar at Kenar.com for preserving radio jingles for collectors around the world. We're back again next week with more Keener memories. We leave you with a Keener custom from Billy LaVise. Listen closely and you'll hear some very familiar call letters. I'm Scott Westerman. Thanks for listening.
Janet said when she was 5 years old, nothing going on at all. Every time she turned on the radio, nothing going down at all. Not at all. Then one day she hit the Detroit station, doing WKNR. It was all